Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, September 11th, 2023. Thank you so much for spending some of your time with me today. Really good to be back after a week off of doing the show, but I want to get right back to it. On this episode, a day that we're told to never forget, I want to highlight what I see as the top five founding principles that should never, ever be forgotten, but really, they've basically all been thrown down the memory hole for generations. And hopefully by sharing this, we can take a small step towards turning that around. But let's get right to it. And number five, and these could change year in and year out, but number five is there is no such thing as liberty or safety. We can only be truly safe when we're free. And we all know that famous Benjamin Franklin quote. You've probably seen variations of it. Here's the original from 1755. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Also from Pennsylvania, John Dickinson, in his famous Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania, which were written in response to the Hated Townsend Acts and were the most widely read documents on American liberty up until publication of Thomas Paine's Common Sense in 1776, he pointed out that if money be raised upon us by others without our consent for our defense, and he put it in scare quotes. I love that he says that. If John Dickinson writes, if money be raised upon us by others without our consent for our defense, those who are the judges in levying it must also be the judges in applying it. And the logical conclusion Dickinson comes to is this: of consequence, the money said to be taken from us for our defense may be employed to our injury. And he's taking a very modest position there, but recognizing that governments claim to take money from you to protect you, but really use it to attack your liberty. He put it this way: we may be chained in by a line of fortifications, obliged to pay for the building and maintaining them, and be told that they are for our defense. We also have James Madison, who wrote in a letter to Thomas Jefferson in the run-up to the signing of the Alien and Sedition Acts in 1798. He said, perhaps it is a universal truth that the loss of liberty at home is to be charged to provisions against danger, real or pretended, from abroad. This isn't some tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. This is James freaking Madison, the father of the Constitution, telling us that it is a universal truth that people lose liberty at home as a way to supposedly protect them from danger abroad, and it's not always even a real danger. Perhaps it is a universal truth that the loss of liberty at home is to be charged to provisions against danger, real or pretended, from abroad. And that brings me to John Taylor of Caroline, who wrote in Tyranny Unmasked in 1822, national defense is the usual pretext for the policy of fleecing the people. For your safety almost always means for your safety does not always mean for your safety. It means so we can control you or so we can rip you off. And John Taylor of Caroline made that pretty clear. It's very similar to what John Dickinson was having to say a few decades earlier. So that was number five. There is no such thing as liberty or safety. We can only be safe when we're free. And that brings me to number four. Speaking of fleecing the people for national defense, a massive national debt makes us weak. It is a national security threat. And here's how George Washington put it in his farewell address. As a very important source of strength and security, cherish public credit. One method of preserving it is to use it as sparingly as possible, avoiding occasions of expense by cultivating peace, but remembering also that timely disbursements to prepare for danger frequently prevent much greater disbursements to repel it. I mean, that's a mouthful there. It's not even the full sentence, but George Washington, there's a lot to unpack there. If you want to have a strong, safe country, don't have a massive national debt. Do not scam or destroy the public credit. And of course, don't use it very often. And then of course, also cultivate peace. This was the foreign policy of George Washington.
He also pointed out that you have to avoid likewise the accumulation of debt, not only by shunning occasions of expense, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidable wars may have occasioned, not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. This has been totally ignored for generations and generations and generations by both major teams, by everyone in office, really. There's all the people who have had power in our lifetime have totally ignored this approach, George Washington's farewell address. And of course, there's Brutus in his great Anti-Federalist Papers, number 8 in 1788. He warned that I can scarcely contemplate a greater calamity that could befall this country than to be loaded with a debt exceeding their ability ever to discharge. The founders, Federalists and Anti-Federalists alike, all recognized that having a massive, unpayable national debt was dangerous not only for security, but dangerous to our liberty. And here's how Thomas Jefferson put it. He said, "It is incumbent on every generation to pay its own debts as it goes, a principle which, if acted on, would save one half the wars of the world." And that brings me to number 3. But first of all, number 4 is a massive national debt makes us weak. It is a dangerous situation. It is a threat to our national security. Of course, we're told the other way around. Everything is a threat to our national security, and they've got to spend more and control more and spy more and do all kinds of everything. But it really is the other way around. We need less government, less spending, and more, well, of the right to self-defense, but that's a different episode. So that brings me to number 3. War is perhaps the greatest threat to liberty. And I've only got one passage. I don't think we need much more than this from the father of the Constitution, James Madison, writing in Political Observations, April 20th, 1795. James Madison put it this way: "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other." Madison continued. He said, "War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for putting the many under the domination of the few." And we have a trifecta today, all three of those in massive amounts, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And because of a situation like this, James Madison warned that no nation, not some, not most, not a few, but no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. While I'm here, I want to point out that everything that I'm mentioning in this episode, I'll be including in links. Alan Mosley puts together, organizes the blog post for this these days at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty. There you're going to find, in the next few hours after this live stream is done this morning, you'll find a blog post published, and a blog post for every episode we've ever done here. I'm not even sure how many. Get probably close to 1,000, maybe in the 700s. I've never really numbered them, but at some point, we got to get on that. But 10thamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty. As you scroll through, you can see the latest episodes. And on each episode page or each episode blog post, you'll not only find all the different platforms we're on. Of course, we live stream on the mainstream ones, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter or X, LinkedIn, Twitch. We also live stream at rumble.com and odyssey.com. Love those platforms and all the people that have been engaging with us there. But we also have the audio-only podcast edition everywhere we can think of, at least. So if we're missing from someplace, do let us know. But you'll also find a show link section. So when you're like, Bolden, you mentioned that thing that James Madison had to say, or what? Who was that letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote about paying off the debts every generation? Well, that was a letter in 1820. But you'll be able to find that, the original source documents, so you can read in context and learn more on your own time. Again, that's over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path. To liberty. This week, I just should mention that I also still have some, the reason I was off most of last week, I did have some family in town, but also I have been having some construction here at my apartment building. I still do have some going on this week, but not as crazy. So I'm probably not going to have an opportunity to do much in the live chat, but if I have a moment, I will at the end of the episode. Anyways, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty, and I want to get right back to it
We're on number two, but the last one was war is the greatest threat to liberty. Number two is law is often but the tyrant's will. This is a quote from Thomas Jefferson as well on a letter to Isaac H. Tiffany in April 1819. I've been citing it quite a bit lately, and I think it's an important one to keep reiterating. Here's how Thomas Jefferson put it. Rightful liberty is unobstructed action according to our will, within the limits drawn up around us by the equal rights of others. I do not add within the limits of the law, because law is often but the tyrant's will, and always so when it violates the right of an individual. So every time they pass a law and it violates the rights of anyone, of an individual, this is nothing more than the tyrant's will. That's a pretty powerful statement. No one follows along with that, but we want to put that kind of message out there more and more. Law is often but the tyrant's will. And it kind of comes from so many people were influenced by Algernon Sidney, especially in the revolutionary period, the great 15-16 years of the great change, radical change in the viewpoints of the people. From 1760, 1761 to 1775, my math is bad, so about 15 years before the first shots were fired at Lexington and Concord in 1775. But they were very much influenced by Algernon Sidney. Jefferson talked about this as one of the influences on the Declaration of Independence as well. And here he is in his publication, 1698. Sidney had already been put to death, which is why he was considered a hero. He was put to death for merely writing a book that was hammering on, well, the people in power. It was never even published. They found it in his home, and they killed him for merely writing this. So he was considered a hero to many, Jefferson, Samuel Adams, and others. But this is one of my favorite quotes from that book, Discourses Concerning Government, which Jefferson considered the best introductory book based in natural law, natural rights, on the principles of government ever written in any language. So that's a 5-star rating I think everyone should go for. But here's how Sidney put it. That which is not just is not law, and that which is not law ought not to be obeyed. Kind of a precursor to Jefferson's law is often but the tyrant's will. Because if it's not just, if it violates someone's rights, it violates the rights of any individual, then it really isn't law. It is just tyranny. It is just arbitrary power and despotism. Again, that's Algernon Sidney. From Discourses Concerning Government, that which is not just is not law, and that which is not law ought not to be obeyed. A lot of stuff that ought not to be obeyed on the books today, so-called laws, rules, regulations, mandates, and the like, and a lot more coming as long as people continue to comply with them. And that brings me to Lysander Spooner, who in his defense for fugitive slaves, which I cite all the time here, he put it this way. An unconstitutional statute is no law in the view of the Constitution. It is void and confers no authority on anyone. I know a lot of people think there's only one quote that Spooner ever wrote, and the only thing he ever wrote was the Constitution is bad, but he wrote quite a bit for decades about the actual structure of the Constitution. Some of it was amazing, some of it was like a little out of left field. But when it comes to some real foundational principles, a lot of what he was citing is no different than what the founders and the old revolutionaries talked about. When he talks about an act outside the Constitution is void, this is really right at the beginning of that radical change in the viewpoints of the people that kicked off the American Revolution. James Otis Jr. in his great speech against the writs of assistance in 1761 told us that an act against the Constitution is void. And many other founders and old revolutionaries had a version of that. So Spooner was just reiterating this essential founding principle. Again, an unconstitutional statute is no law in the view of the Constitution. It is void and confers no authority on anyone. So number two is law is often but the tyrant's will. And I think in most situations today, that a vast majority of what we have on the books today fits that description almost perfectly. And number one, I think this is the most important thing that almost everyone misses. Even people who claim to support or who do support the Constitution and liberty, they don't recognize how the founders taught us to enforce the Constitution. They think that what the government schools have
filled us with propaganda with from day one. And even if you didn't go to a government-run school, you still went to a government-approved school in most situations. They think that the proper way to deal with the government doing stuff that they're not supposed to do is go to the government and ask the government to stop doing the stuff it wasn't supposed to do in the first place. And that only guarantees that government will continue doing more and more and more of the stuff that it was never supposed to do in the first place. So relying on government to limit itself means that government will never stop growing. That is the number one forgotten principle, I think, of today. And here's James Iredell, who's one of the first associate justices of the Supreme Court. He was nominated for that position by George Washington. And he put it this way in the North Carolina Ratifying Convention of 1788. The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. So one of the first justices of the Supreme Court tells us, James Iredell tells us, that the only way to deal with usurpations of power, that is an exercise of power not delegated to the government in the Constitution, is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. Everything else is doomed to failure. Here's John Dickinson in Fabius number 4, another one that I cite all the time. Dickinson, we could call him the father of the Articles of Confederation, but some years later, in 1788, he was advocating for ratification of the Constitution. And he pointed out that a good Constitution promotes but does not always produce a good administration. Words on paper cannot guarantee that government is going to follow the words on paper. This is absurd to even think that. And he went on further. He asked, it must be granted that a bad administration may take place. What is then to be done? That's the essential question. When there is a bad administration like we've had for our entire lives, what do you do about it? And Dickinson told us the answer is instantly found before the supreme sovereignty of the people. Sovereignty meaning final authority. So the answer to a bad administration is not to go to the bad administration and beg that administration to stop doing what that administration should never have been doing in the first place. It's up to the people to deal with it. And that's exactly how Dickinson put it. He said, it is their duty to watch and their right to take... Let me start that one again. It is their duty to watch and their right to take care that the Constitution be preserved. Or in the Roman phrase, on perilous occasions, to provide that the Republic receive no damage. So according to John Dickinson, to James Iredell, and many others, it's up to the people to protect and defend their own Constitution and their own liberty, whether the government happens to like it or not. And I want to wrap it up here with Thomas Paine in Rights of Man, Part 2. I think this is 1792. He said, the strength and powers of despotism consist wholly in the fear of resisting it, and that in order to be free, it is sufficient that he wills it. So according to Thomas Paine, it is really just a battle of wills. Government, when they try to attack your liberty, they get away with it as long as the people are fearful of resisting it. And when the people take a stand and put an end to it, then there is no despotism. Again, I really appreciate you spending some of your time with me today. I am going to cut it out a little bit earlier here than I normally do, so I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed putting this information together for you. I want to point out that nothing helps us get this kind of information out to more and more people more than the financial faith and support of our members. You can join us for as little as $2 a month over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. If you got a couple of bucks of that quickly depreciating, dirty government fiat, throw it our way. Again, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. And while I'm talking about this for just a moment, I want to say a quick but very huge thank you to just a handful of people who have joined us as members recently. There's James in Alaska, Linda in Oregon, Richard in Texas, Shelley in California, Jack in Georgia, and Lewis in Florida. I really appreciate your support. Again, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. We also have lifetime, annual, five-year options. Don't feel obligated to join us. Even though I'm given a little bit of pressure and a spiel about this, don't feel obligated. We have thousands and thousands of articles and blogs and podcasts and stuff all over our website over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com. We're going to continue making this stuff available for free, but certainly it does It costs us money to be able to pay people to do the things that need to be done to continue producing this content and sharing it as widely as possible. We've got a lot more that we really need to be doing. Mike Meharry and I have been doing a lot of back and forth on our annual State of the Nullification Movement report. We've gone through most of the sections. I think maybe we have one or two more to go. And sometime in the next month or two, we should have that available for free. Over 250 pages talking about strategy to protect and defend the Constitution and liberty without relying on the government to magically limit itself, because it never does that, and how it's being put into practice today. That'll be over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/report soon. But anyways, I'm kind of getting sidetracked there. I really appreciate you being here. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope your Monday's off to a good start, and I hope to see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.